Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/AcrossAmerica.
Up to four lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device credit service ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
The following program has been pre-recorded. Thanks for tuning in this weekend to Let's Talk Portland, Odyssey Portland's weekly public affairs program. I'm Gary Bloxham. On the show this time, I would like to welcome Dr. Brian Bell with Providence Cancer Institute and also Dan Floyd, Chief Operating Officer for Hood to Coast. Hey there, guys. Welcome to Let's Talk Portland.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having us.
So, Dan, I thought we'd get started with you today, and maybe you can let us know what the connection between Providence Cancer Institute and Hood to Coast is.
Yeah, no problem. There's a ton of history with Hood to Coast, and we can get into that if you'd like. But specific to the connection, it started in the early 2000s when the founder of Hood to Coast was diagnosed with cancer. He's healthy and doing well, but he, like many other people, had an immediate connection to cancer research, treatment, support services, and also had a platform that is something that people from all 50 states and 40 plus countries followed. So there was an opportunity to raise money for cancer research. And like I said, it started in the early 2000s, but it quickly moved towards the Providence Cancer Institute, I think partly because of our own awareness as a company and an organization, but also the evolution of the Providence Cancer Institute here locally in Oregon. So we really quickly recognized that there's a world-class institution right here in our own backyard, and that the funds that we raised didn't have to leave the state. And it was something that we became very proud of, that we could be part of the Providence Cancer Institute, raise money from the participants, and keep it right here in the state where the 200-mile course travels, and know that we're giving back directly to our community, but also in a way that impacts the world. And so the decision wasn't made to give back because we wanted to tell people it stays local. It's not only stays local, but it gives back to a world-class institution that Dr. Bell is part of leading.
Excellent. Well, Dr. Bell, let me ask you, the Providence Cancer Institute was founded about 30 years ago. What led to that establishment?
Well, thanks. And thanks, Dan, for being here and for all of your support over the years. It was really founded on the vision of Walter Erba. He's our director, has been for 30 years, and he was recruited by Providence leaders almost 30 years ago now, specifically for building a cancer research center within a system of community hospitals to serve Oregonians. And the unique thing about Dr. Erba's vision was building a cancer research center that was focused on immunotherapy or boosting the immune system to fight cancer. This was really a novel, kind of far out idea at the time. And the concept was in part because nobody thought that immunotherapy or boosting the immune system would work to kill cancer. And the idea was to create a center where scientists and clinicians work together side by side to translate new discoveries from the lab directly to the clinic as quickly as possible, where they can benefit patients, and to do it not in some far off center somewhere, but right in the sidewalks of the communities in which our cancer patients live. And I think that's what made it quite novel. And I think we're proud, and all Oregonians should be proud of our accomplishments in drug development and cancer research in particular. Many of you know of the story of Brian Druker's work with the development of Gleevec and the first targeted therapy. But what's less known is Dr. Erba's work on the development of ipilimumab, and this was the first clinical trial, one of the most impactful clinical trials in the history of medicine, I would say, that tested a type of immunotherapy called ipilimumab. And this was a drug that an immunotherapy that was used to treat metastatic melanoma. And this was a disease that was almost uniformly fatal at the time. And in fact, 15 years ago, things were so bad for a patient with metastatic melanoma that the standard of care was essentially a clinical trial, because there was widespread recognition that nothing much made a difference. Well, ipilimumab worked, and it ushered in the development of other immunotherapies. And today, more than 50% of all patients with metastatic melanoma are alive and well 5 years later. And that is a truly seismic advancement in the war on cancer. And that was it was translated from the bench to the bedside through clinical trials in which Oregonians often had the first right of refusal. So it's quite an accomplishment.
I'd say so. That's pretty amazing. Science wins. Dr. Bell, can you share some insights into current trends or approaches to cancer treatment?
Sure. Well, we and others have the only problem with immunotherapy is that not enough patients respond and benefit. When they do, they often do get lasting benefit, and a few even with advanced stage cancer can be cured. But the field is really now working towards improving response rates. So identifying biomarkers that might predict response, developing new targets in the immune system to stimulate or to shut down that might favorably impact response rates and improve survival. So one of the things that we and others are currently working on is a type of immunotherapy called adoptive cellular therapy. And in this approach, we use immune cells within the tumor, cells that are called tumor-infiltrating lymphocytes, or TIL, T-I-L. They're kind of like the body's warriors against cancer. And we use them as kind of a living drug. We take a piece of tumor from wherever it might be accessible. We isolate those TIL, those tumor-infiltrating lymphocytes, in the laboratory. We then culture them and expand them to billions of times and then give them back to a patient as a drug, often with another immunotherapy aside it. And in yet another milestone for the cancer community, for cancer patients, just last week, the FDA approved adoptive cell therapy with TIL for patients with metastatic melanoma whose cancer had progressed on other immunotherapies. And, you know, once again, this was a great example of Oregonians having access to a potentially life-saving therapy years before it became widely available.
Are these treatments and therapies, do they work on all types of cancers, or are they for specific types?
Well, that's a great question. So we learned pretty quickly that they don't work equally as well on all types of cancer. For example, immunotherapy, as I mentioned, is a very effective therapy for patients with melanoma, with renal cell carcinoma, and a few others. And the commonality seems to be the number of mutations within a cancer that are essentially targets for the immune system. So the more of these mutations, the more targets, the better a chance the immune system has to recognize and respond to the cancer. So so some cancers and the cancers that respond well, we tend to call hot cancers, because they're loaded with these immune cells. But some cancers are what we call cold cancers, and they have a paucity of immune cells, sometimes no immune cells. And those are the ones that we really struggle to get responses from. A great example of that, those types of cancers, is pancreatic cancer, which, as most people know, remains a really deadly disease. And so one of the ways we're focused on that is making our immune cells smarter. And I mentioned the adoptive cell therapy approach, or these TIL. Well, our current work is focused on engineering these cells. So rather than taking them from the tumor itself, we can harvest them from the blood, genetically engineer them in the lab to express a certain receptor that recognizes specific mutations in the tumor. We call them neoantigens. And then we expand those engineered cells billions of times and infuse them back into a patient. And yet another milestone in the field of oncology, again, coming out of Oregon, we showed about a year and a half ago a durable tumor remission for a patient with metastatic pancreatic cancer using this gene-engineered approach. This was the first time in history that had been shown. We published that in the New England Journal, made global headlines, that gave us, real assurance that this approach is, in fact, a promising way forward. And so currently at Providence, our director of experimental cellular therapy, Ron Leidner, Eric Tran, who we recruited out of the NIH a few years ago, they and others are working really hard on developing other more personalized approaches to cellular therapy. That currently we have a clinical trial that's using slightly different approach that isolates only mutation specific TIL for adoptive transfer, and this is a slightly nuanced but equally as promising approach.
We're talking today with Dr. Brian Bell with Providence Cancer Institute, and Dr. Bell, we talked a little bit ago about how the Cancer Institute was developed or founded about 30 years ago. You've told us some great advancements that have been made in the last few years, but can you kind of compare and contrast those 30 years? What's transpired over those 30 years?
It's remarkable. If you look at the state of cancer in, say, the early 90s, not only have advancements in therapy improved things, but especially population-based smoking cessation and screening efforts for early detection have substantially reduced the death rate, and we've seen a 35% reduction in death from cancer since the early 1990s, and that is really unprecedented. And I think we have a lot to be proud of, but we've got to do better. There are still far too many patients that don't benefit from existing therapies, and there is inequitable access to those therapies. So I'll give you a couple examples of way we're trying to address both of those, beyond just drug discovery and developing new approaches. We're moving existing approaches into earlier stages of the disease. For example, giving them prior to surgery in the so-called curative setting, so that that more patients can benefit and fewer patients will recur and get to that advanced stage where it's so difficult to cure them. If you think about it, for too long, we have relied on cutting tumors out with a knife, and I'm a surgeon. Right, so that's what I do. That's what I've trained to do. But we've got to move forward. Sure, our surgery is less invasive than it used to be. Our reconstruction is more elegant, but that doesn't change the fact that far too many patients are substantially affected by extirpative surgery. So a woman's body, for example, is often irrevocably changed after the treatment for breast cancer. Parts of a bowel are rerouted during treatment for colon cancer. Sometimes life is never the same. Imagine for a minute if surgery, or at least the sometimes more mutilating form of surgery, no longer had to exist. If instead, with the right biomarker and the right immunotherapy, most or all of the cancer went away and you didn't need surgery at all. And this is the promise of what we we call neoadjuvant immunotherapy or preoperative immunotherapy. And this is what we and others are working on. It's very exciting. The other issue, as I mentioned, is equitable access. And we've got to, we know that far too many patients do not have access to the same treatment or access to clinical trials. There are inequities in how patients from rural areas are able to access these therapies, from other economic and ethnic minorities are also having difficulties with access, and we've got to overcome some of these gaps. At Providence, we're committed to serving all, especially the poor and vulnerable, promoting patients' quality of life through an array of patient and caregiver support programs. We've got to bring these trials into our rural communities and into our areas where they're more difficult to access.
We're talking today with Dr. Brian Bell with the Providence Cancer Institute. And also with us is Dan Floyd, Chief Operating Officer with Hood to Coast. Hey there, Dan, let's bring you back in and have you talk about how does Hood to Coast contribute to cancer awareness and fundraising, and how much have you guys raised for the Providence Cancer Institute?
Thank you for asking. Just to clarify that it's the participants and the volunteers that raise the money. They do the hard work just like we don't run or walk the race for people. We don't raise the money for them, but we provide a platform and we give our own time, and some give their own money. But really it's an opportunity to raise money for something that we believe in and what Dr. Bell is doing and Dr. Erba and Dr. Fox and others who do such a good job at relaying the message and making it so people like you and I who are not in the medical field can understand what we're doing and see the progress that is being made. So I think, and Dr. Belkin, I don't know if you want him to speak to this, but he can, as far as participating in the race, you know that it's a challenge, and it's just like many things in life, the running the race can be difficult, the training, the dedication, and going through an experience that is not easy, but doing it with other people and not only fulfilling your own goals, but doing something that helps support other people, complete something that is difficult, creates a bond, and it creates a memory, something you have in your head forever, but also kind of can train you in other areas of life to move through difficult things or some adversity. And not to say that running a race is the same as curing cancer or cancer treatment, but it does train that adversity. Our participants know that they know they can do difficult things, and they do difficult things, and they're moved by what Dr. Bell is doing. And so our organization, because we have such a popular event, we're able to sell out that event, and then we're able to put as two times as many people participating in the race are on a waiting list attempting to get into the race.
Wow.
So they have an opportunity. So when it comes to raising money for Providence, it's an economical thing. It's a supply and demand issue that we hold back a certain amount of teams. And we say, if you'd like to participate in the event, you can, but now it's going to be a $12,000 minimum commitment to the Providence Cancer Institute. But what we find when that happens is that people make that commitment and that money comes in pretty fast because they're moved by what Dr. Bell is saying and they believe in the mission, and it becomes less about participating in a race and it becomes a hell of a lot more about finding a cure for cancer and the positive statistics that Dr. Bell talks about, but also the motivation to do better. And so you set a $12,000 goal, and most of those teams fly past their goal. $12,000 ends up not being enough for them.
Wow.
So they easily reach their goal. And because of that, most years we've raised over $900,000. This year, just like the last few years, our goal has been $1 million, and it's not that we fall short. The participants do a great job raising that money, and they end up in the high 900s. But I do think this year, 2024, will be the year that we provide a platform and messaging, and we encourage participants to raise money. But this will be the year that the participants will raise over $1 million. And again, 100% of that stays locally, and it goes to support what Dr. Bell has been saying.
That's fantastic. Dan, for somebody listening, could you explain what Hood to Coast is? I guess we should get that out there.
Yeah, good. All right, good. Good question. Yes, it is a relay race. I'll dumb it down. It's a relay race that starts at Timberline Lodge in Mount Hood and extends or goes 200 miles down Highway 26 through the city of Portland and then through the coastal mountains, ending on the north coast in Seaside, Oregon. So 200 miles, 12 participants on each team. Each runner or runner would run three legs, varying in distance. So you can do the math on that. 200 miles divided by 12 people, it's roughly 18 miles per person. So it's quite the feat. It takes the average team about 30 hours to complete it. But you get to see and experience the teamwork. You get to build memories, and you see, and we get to showcase 200 beautiful miles of Oregon with some diverse terrain and diverse scenery. Like I said, mountains, tall mountains, the city, and then some coastal mountains, which is different. And of course, ending at the Pacific Ocean. So it's a long relay race with 20,000 participants. It started in 1982 with 80 participants, more as something that would just be fun. And as it has evolved into the most popular and longest relay race in the world. And annually we put 40,000 people on a waiting list, and it's allowed us to expand that mission. It's a company, but it's also allowed us to spread that mission of getting the world to move as far away as China, Taiwan, Israel, Europe. And we have 40 plus events throughout the States and throughout the world, mostly in the United States, but in three continents and five countries.
Wow. When is Hood to Coast this year?
When is it? It is August 24th and 25th.
Okay. Dan, have you done Hood to Coast?
Greg, yes. Long before I ever worked here, I participated twice. I am a much different participant these days. I didn't, like many Hood to Coast runners, you get asked with short amount of time to prepare. And that was me 10, 12 years ago. And now I'm an avid runner. Runner, walker, mover. And like I said, I think our entire office wants to get the world to move. That's our mission. But I think we're also living it, doing it. Others like Dr. Bell are participating by being the charity of choice. But like I said, he's also participating in the race enthusiastically. And
is that true, Dr. Bell?
That is.
What's that experience like for you? Tell me, Dr. Bell, what's the experience of doing Hood to Coast? What is it like?
It is absolutely fantastic. I liken the research for curing cancer is like Hood to Coast, less more of a sprint and more of a relay race, relying on a bunch of different people. You know, it's a pretty unique experience. To do the race 200 miles, over mountains, down a mountain, through the city in the middle of the summer. You're usually in a van with anywhere from six or more people. Everyone's tired, sweaty, from different backgrounds, different work, different parts of life, and you're all there with a shared goal. And that is finishing the race and hopefully benefiting the charity of their choice. And it really is like any team sport. It's one where you celebrate each other's small victories. You lean on each other when you're having problems and post each other at the end of it when it's all done. And I have to say, I've done it, I think, four times, and it's been one of the most rewarding experiences of my life. And Dan, I'm so appreciative of you and your team for putting on such an incredible race. We also got to give a shout out for all of the volunteers, and Dan can speak to this. I mean, you can imagine the organization that it takes to put on a relay race down a major highway through a major city to the coast in the middle of the summer. It's a logistical nightmare, So the fact that Dan and his team do it with such excellence and pull it off is really remarkable, I think.
That's great. Dan, as we wrap up here, let us know how we can get more information about Hood to Coast.
HoodToCoast.com. And really, like I said earlier, it's about the race series, and it's about all the different events that are on HoodToCoast.com. The big Hood to Coast race that we keep discussing is sold out usually 11 months in advance. But the point is to get the world to move, get out and move, and take part in those benefits of physical and mental health that come with being able to move. And it's not just running, walking, it can be cycling, but just get out and experience life, move. And with Hood to Coast comes the connection to family and friends, and like I keep saying, lifelong memories, and that's important. So go to hoodtocoast.com and join us.
Excellent. This has been a great conversation, guys. Thanks so much for being on the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We've been talking today with Dr. Brian Bell with Providence Cancer Institute and Dan Floyd with Hood to Coast. Thanks again, guys.
If you'd like to hear this interview again, just search for Let's Talk Portland on the Odyssey app. Let's Talk Portland is an Odyssey Portland public affairs program.
Odyssey celebrates the class of 2024, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
I met a guy recently who told me that he spends roughly $250,000 a month. I talked to another person recently who made $50 million at the age of 30. What do you do with that money? How do you spend it? How do you not spend it? What do you invest in? If you meet a rich person, these are questions everyone wants to know, but you're too embarrassed to ask. That's the whole premise of MoneyWise. We talk to real people who have made a significant amount of money, and we ask them all about their finances. My name's Sam Parr, and the podcast is called MoneyWise. That's one word, MoneyWise. You can find MoneyWise wherever you get your podcasts.